This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
You don't see a nickname like the smoothie poisoning dentist unless something has gone seriously and deeply wrong. But what's so disturbing about the James Craig case isn't just what he allegedly did. It's how perfectly normal he looked while doing it. This was a man with a dental practice, 6 kids, a church community, a mortgage, no mugshots in the past, no angry neighbors whispering about him before it all came out. James wasn't hiding in the shadows. He was shaking hands in broad daylight. And if prosecutors are right, he was allegedly using that exact persona to poison his wife, one smoothie at a time, while texting her sweet nothings in between. This episode is about that mask, the charm, the curated life, the version of himself that Craig built, maintained, and allegedly weaponized, even as his wife's death was imminent and her health declined, and his Google search history started looking like a criminology syllabus from hell. With me today is psychotherapist Siobhan Scott, author of The Minds of Mass Killers, available wherever you get books, and her new memoir also out, which is very, very good, Nightbird. Highly recommend both of them to you. How someone can present as a devoted father, husband, doctor, and allegedly slow motion killer. We're going into the psychology behind compartmentalization, how people split themselves into versions that never touch. We'll talk about charm as camouflage, the emotional anesthesia that lets someone act loving while doing real harm, and how families and communities often don't spot it until it's way too late. What traits let someone live a lie so thoroughly that even their own kids don't question it? Let's start pulling off that mask.
Well, you sure got narcissism. You've got a guy who compartmentalizes really effectively, but is very self-aggrandizing, thinks he's got power that, you know, obviously he didn't. He got caught. And he wants to keep up an image, you know. He wants to look like this loving husband and father, this terrific dentist. And I guess his employees actually thought he was a great guy. So this is a person very invested in his appearance, but clearly he's got a sadistic streak and a psychopathic streak. You talk about manipulative.
Let's talk about that for a second and really get into the why of narcissists, people with narcissistic personality disorder more specifically, have such an obsession with image. Is it because they are so uncomfortable in who they are at a baseline? Because at the baseline, it's this guy who is having ideas run through his mind of, let's murder my wife, let's do these horrible things. But if he turns that switch on and puts on the persona of happy-go-lucky dentist and comes across to people as this positive figure, you know, almost, you know, kind of outspoken, a bit verbose, those louder folks that are, they're there, they got the personality, they're always on. He seems like he was probably that type of guy when he was in a better place. I mean, that ruse that they put on, why run to that? Why is it so difficult to take a look at oneself from a deeper perspective and go, maybe I should fix this and I don't have to do all that?
There are different theories about why people develop this way. And of course, one theory, probably the common one in the culture, is that they have this internal sense of inadequacy, that they're never good enough. And because of that distress, they learn really early in life to put on this facade, which makes them look successful, makes them feel better about themselves. But there's also, you know, as we're studying so much more about genetics and the interaction of genetics and early environment, some people are just born a bit different and don't have that sense of conscience that the rest of us have. And so there can be multiple things going on with a person like this, but they sure learn young in life that they can manipulate people. And very often they've been raised by parents who fall for it. Mm-hmm. And so it works well for them. They're Machiavellian in that way.
Does it start out in someone like this? Like, if you were to look back and theorize, you know, James Craig, obviously innocent till proven guilty. We should say that everything here in this conversation is alleged and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But with someone like James Craig, if you were to look back at his childhood, do you think you'd find something where very early on he was, you know, kind of in an odd duck, maybe didn't fit in, was kind of the dork, and then had to strive, had to really go far? I mean, he became a successful dentist to a certain extent. I mean, that takes a lot of school, takes a lot of work, takes some smarts to get there. That's not just like, hey, anybody who wants to do it can do it. You do take, has some talent there. So obviously he found an area of life where his skills could be used and he could be looked at in a positive way. And then he went far with it. Is that where we find a lot of drive in some folks like this, where you can go really far when used in the right way, but if you never quite address the darker part of you, that resentful part of you that was bullied, and try to make some sort of peace there, it just seems to continue to fester, and that becomes your norm, and this fake version of you is what people see. But if you get back to the real you, it's a dangerous person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure could be that he had wounds early in life, you know, and you mentioned school, peer groups, could be that. And so this was what he came up with to compensate for it. Or he may have been the little charmer in first grade, you know, who already just sort of came out of the chute with this manipulative streak. It's hard to know.
Are there any markers in people like this who are able to seemingly split their lives into compartments with zero guilt? Like if you're an employee of James Craig while he was a dentist, I mean, if you didn't know his deep life of what was going on, of all these side women while he's married, while his wife is dying, literally, that one would notice and go, maybe there's something more to this guy. But they seem to be able to keep it very well hidden and very, exactly the word is, compartmentalized off. It's not always the easiest to see, but are there cracks sometimes and markers that are visible?
Sometimes there are cracks. And I think I mentioned this story a while back, but it's relevant. Early in my practice, I was subletting an office from a therapist who was very charming. He was good looking, charismatic. He, you know, attracted a lot of clients because he was, you know, a good communicator. He was so likable. And over time, this was in a very small community. I was approached by different business people in town, because you really couldn't keep secrets in a small community, that he was writing hot checks. And he knew he was writing hot checks to local businesses. So, you know, there's an element of stupid with that.
Yeah.
And I immediately said, I'm getting out of here because I don't want this to rub off on me. But it was really surprising how well, you know, this person could perform. And later on, he wasn't killing anybody, far as I know, but these other secrets that, you know, were this other part of him started to come out. So it's really hard to know up front. And you don't know maybe until you've known somebody a long time and then you start to see some evidence.
And they're doing it not in a way that I think some of us, we on the outside, would be looking at it. Like, you would be looking at it going, oh my God, this is horrible behavior. Like, you shouldn't be writing hot checks. That's not an okay thing. But in his mind, it's probably not saying the same thing. It's somehow justifying this behavior because of something. Sometimes it's a slight. Sometimes it's, well, if this didn't happen, I wouldn't have to do this.
Right.
In that case there, that one specifically that you gave an example of, how do you think he was justifying that in his mind?
He justified all sorts of things. Yeah, he was getting calls because I started really paying attention to the voicemails left on the phone. And this was in the days when, before everybody had their individual cell phones, there was one phone for the office. And I started listening very carefully to the messages that were left. And there were bill collectors all the time calling for him and leaving those threatening messages that bill collectors do. And when I confronted him on that, it was just, you know, there was always an excuse. There was always a reason. It was a mistake.
Yeah.
And so I think these folks tell themselves stories in order to justify what they do. And they believe it. They just perceive the world very differently. And that's how you know you're dealing with a personality disorder, because it's the way they go through life, perceiving things through a very different lens than the rest of us.
I would say a big one is if you're getting to know somebody and there's a lot of red flags around, like people coming at them with something like bill collectors or whatever it may be, and the answer is typically written off as, oh, it's all a misunderstanding.
Very much.
It's all a misunderstanding. Very much. Nothing to worry about. It's just a misunderstanding. And then it's like, how many misunderstandings do you have with people? Because I don't think most of us live our life in a consistent state of misunderstanding with others.
Yeah. And the other interesting component of this, I was friends with his wife, who was also a therapist. And she had absolutely no clue. She eventually did figure it out, probably at bankruptcy time. Oops, you know. And so they divorced, but I spoke with her later about it, and he had completely hidden his spending and his deceptive stuff with finances from her. She had no idea. And she was a smart woman.
Yeah. Another element to things like this, where people get so deceptive and they find ways of justifying it in their mind and to others, would be the religious angle. Craig was a member of the LDS Mormon Church. It again comes up so damn often on this program with people that are making really weird, bad decisions, that are hiding things, but seemingly being driven by some sort of narrative or some sort of shame. How do you think that could have added pressure to maintain, you know, the sightliness, to maintain an image that others won't truly see the dark side of?
It's almost like that faith, whether it's the Mormon church or a different church, it serves as a cover for predatory people. They find that they can play the role. It's pretty easy to fool the folks that they go to church with who don't know them well. They certainly don't know the dark side. And it's sort of like, you know, the priest who molests altar boys. Yeah. I mean, it's like, here's the perfect cover for you, because everybody thinks you're this wonderful person.
Yeah. What's so dangerous about someone like James Craig, if the allegations hold, isn't just what he did, it's how cleanly he got away with it. Until he didn't. He didn't need to hide a basement or in a basement or lie low. He just kept smiling, kept doing what people expected of him, showed up at work, played the husband role, sent the right texts, all while allegedly planning, timing, executing. That's the hardest thing to wrap your head around. When someone weaponizes not just love, but trust, their entire persona becomes a kind of emotional camouflage. And as Siobhan pointed out, charm isn't proof of empathy. It's often just emotional manipulation with good lighting. And people like this, the high-functioning predators, they're some of the hardest to spot. They check all the boxes: career, kids, community involvement. But when you peel it back, what's underneath is often cold calculation. Families don't always miss the signs. Sometimes they see them, but they downplay, rationalize, spiritualize. And in Craig's case, that religious backdrop may have only added more pressure to keep up the performance. So what's the takeaway here? It's that someone can live a lie for a long time, and sometimes the better they are at seeming normal, the more dangerous they actually are. It's a warning not to distrust everyone, but to pay attention when something doesn't feel right, even if they're saying all the right things. Especially when they're saying all the right things. In our next piece of the conversation with Siobhan, the poison, the psychology behind choosing cyanide and Visine, why someone would kill slowly, not quickly, and what that says about control, sadism, and what this murder may have been really about. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss that conversation that we're going to drop with Siobhan right here. Wherever you get podcasts, press subscribe there. If you're not on YouTube yet and you want to have a conversation and join in on this, just search us out, Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski. Search that on YouTube or wherever you get podcasts so you can subscribe and not miss a single episode. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.